These are your Oklahoma portraits. Busy cities and peaceful towns, bustling industries and placid farmlands, an empire of cattle, oil, and wheat. This is Oklahoma today. But what of Oklahoma's past and the men and women who helped mold it into the sturdy young giant that it is today? The Oklahoma School of the Air presents dramatic true pictures of the men and women who contributed to the destiny of this great state. These are your Oklahoma portraits.
For nearly 100 years, the Shoto family dominated the fur trade of the Mississippi Valley and the Missouri. From New Orleans, they pioneered along its tributaries to blaze trails, settle trading posts, colonize communities, and found cities. The great city of St. Louis had its beginnings with this family's trading enterprise. And when the Spanish interfered with the Shoto trade with the Osage Indians in Missouri, the Osage chief, Claremont, thought so highly of the Shotos that he brought a portion of his tribe to the Three Forks of the Arkansas in Oklahoma so that his tribe's trade with the Shotos might be continued. There are many important members of the famous Shoto family. Auguste Pierre played a prominent role in the early history of Oklahoma. He had the confidence and trust of white man and red man alike. But let's pick up the story of Auguste Pierre in the year 1815. Auguste Pierre had conducted a trapping and trading venture along the Arkansas. The venture was profitable until he and his partner were captured by Spanish soldiers and put in irons at Santa Fe, a center for Spanish trade at that time.
Which of you men would prefer to act as spokesman in your defense?
I will, sir.
Your name?
Auguste Pierre Shoto.
Ah, yes. I have your record and statement from the preliminary investigation right here. Let's see. Auguste Pierre Shoto, born in the city of St. Louis in the year 1786. Later appointed to West Point by Thomas Jefferson. Graduated from West Point with the rank of second lieutenant. Served as an aide to General James Wilkinson on the border. And later resigned to go into the trading business. Still later, you served as captain in the Missouri militia throughout the War of 1812. And what did you do after the war, Senor Shoto?
I went back into the trapping and trading business.
And this brings us to the matter at hand. You are charged with violating the boundaries of New Spain and engaging in fur trapping and trading without a permit from the government of New Spain. It is the opinion of this court that you are guilty as charged. Fortunately, your crime is not a serious one. The goods found in your possession at the time of your capture have been valued at $30,000. They will, of course, be confiscated. Other than this, you are free to go. Remove their irons.
$30,000 represented a tremendous amount of money in 1815. Shoto reported the details of his captivity to the Secretary of War and said,
"On my return home, I was determined to abandon a trade that was so attended with so much risk until the time the United States government would extend its protection to its citizens."
Shoto, however, did not abandon his calling. He had a keen capacity to barter, and the exchange of trinkets, tobacco, and tools for furs, skins, and buffalo robes was good business. He bought a trading post at the Falls of the Verdigris in 1823 near the present site of Salina. And for Rosalie, his Indian wife, he built a log palace on the Neosho. Here he lived like a feudal lord. He even built a racetrack for his friends and was lavish in his hospitality. But while Shoto was enjoying prosperity and happiness, Indian wars threatened to shatter the peace along the frontier. As the situation grew increasingly desperate, it became necessary on July 14, 1832, for President Andrew Jackson to summon three important men to the White House. One of these men was Montfort Stokes, governor of North Carolina, and a veteran of the Revolutionary War. President Andrew Jackson had an important mission in mind for Governor Stokes and his commission. As they waited for General Jackson to join them, the men discussed the difficulty along the Arkansas in what is now Oklahoma.
Well, gentlemen, I think it's mainly trouble that's developed as a result of the removal of the Cherokees from Georgia to Oklahoma.
But the Cherokees are a highly civilized people.
So are we, gentlemen, but we sometimes go to war, too. The Cherokees are settled on some of the lands occupied by the Osage. Now, as you may know, some of the Osage went from Missouri to the Three Forks of the Arkansas to trade with the Choteaus. Now that the Cherokees are there, well, trouble has broken out all along the frontier with the Osage. It could become a most serious thing, not only for the two tribes involved, but for all the Indians along that part of the frontier, as well as the white traders located there. And, of course, it greatly increases the hazards of travel along that part of the frontier.
Shall we stand, gentlemen? I believe the president is about to arrive.
Well, good morning, gentlemen. Good morning. Sit down, please. Gentlemen, I've called you here for a very important reason. Of course, you all realize that conditions along the frontier have become critical with the Western Indian tribes.
Well, Mr. President, we were discussing the frontier situation as you entered the room, and we were wondering as to what the cause of the disturbance might be.
From all reports, the Indian tribes seem to be at cross purposes among themselves, and, of course, they're being stirred against the white settlers by Mexican agents.
Good heavens, can't the Army do something about this sort of thing?
I only wish that were possible, Governor Stokes. Unfortunately, nearly all of the soldiers are in Florida putting down the Seminole Rebellion. Consequently, we have only a handful of soldiers to guard the frontier.
Well, then what's to be done?
What's to be done? Well, sir, I'm appointing a special commission composed of three gentlemen. Governor Stokes, you will head the commission. You will enter into important negotiations with the Indians of the West and attempt to settle the difficulties that arise concerning their problems.
Mr. President, the frontier is strange country to me. I have no knowledge of the languages spoken by the various tribes. How will our commission be able to communicate with the Indians?
I'm glad you mentioned that, Governor Stokes. In order that your commission will have proper assistance, I have instructed the Secretary of War to write a letter to Colonel Shoto, requesting him to cooperate with the commission and give it the benefit of his extensive acquaintance and friendship with the Indians.
Oh, yes, I believe Governor Stokes mentioned the Shotos before you arrived, but who exactly is Colonel Shoto?
A very remarkable man, sir. He's a West Point graduate, fought in the War of 1812, and now owns a string of trading posts. He's been highly recommended by Sam Houston, and from all I can gather, Colonel Shoto is better acquainted with the situation of Indian tribes and of Indian manners, habits, and disposition than any other man west of the Mississippi River.
Well, if Sam Houston recommends him, that's good enough for me.
Well, Mr. President, you can bet we'll do our best.
I'm sure you shall, and may I wish you gentlemen the very best of luck.
Wonderful.
Excellent meal. May I say, Colonel Shoto, that I haven't seen hospitality such as yours since I left North Carolina.
Thank you, Governor Stokes.
And I'd like to add my compliments for your hospitality, Colonel Shoto, and I would also like to ask you a question, if I may.
Certainly.
Well, you seem to have built up quite an empire of trading posts out here on the frontier. Tell me, Colonel, what's the secret of your merchandising success?
Well, you may be disappointed when I tell you I haven't really got a magic formula, I'm afraid.
I think I can answer that question for Colonel Shoto. As near as I can gather from talking to the people around here, the secret of his merchandising success lies in hard work and square dealing. In fact, it was these qualities that probably had a lot to do with Colonel Shoto's success in initiating the Dragoon Expedition and organizing the first great intertribal council at Camp Holmes.
Oh, Governor Stokes, I believe you're embarrassing the colonel with all that praise.
Well, I apologize for making that little speech, Colonel Shoto. I guess I've been in politics too long. Even so, Colonel, I can't help but feel grateful that we have a man of your enormous experience and capability to assist us in this mission.
Gentlemen, I propose a toast to our undertaking. Peace on the American frontier.
Indeed.
Peace on the American frontier.
Shoto was delegated by the Indian Commission to hold peace councils with the Plains tribes. He signed and executed treaties with the Kiowas, Apaches, and Tawakonasin. At his own expense, it was his last patriotic act in the public service. He died in 1838 near Fort Gibson and was buried there with full military honors. Auguste Pierre Choteau made a lasting contribution to the occupation and development of the great Southwest. Washington Irving once said of him, "Because of his many qualifications, Colonel Choteau was looked up to as a leader." The red men are endowed with a kind of sixth sense that lies in intuition. They easily detect sham and instinctively take the measure of a man as it reveals itself in word or act. The greatest tribute that could be paid to the character of Choteau is that the Indians had complete confidence in him. Even unto this day, the name Choteau is a symbol for integrity, fortitude, and public service in Oklahoma. Oklahoma Portraits was written and produced by Judge Springer. Heard in today's cast were Ben Smith as President Andrew Jackson, Judge Springer as Governor Munford Stokes, Carl Clay as Choteau, John Pomeroy as the magistrate, and Don Hatch as an official. Your narrator is Neil Jones.
Join us next week in the Oklahoma School of the Air for Oklahoma Portraits.